loading fast and they're riding hard. It's time for excitement and adventure in the modern West with Bobby Benson and the B-Bar-B Riders. And out in front, the Strider's golden Palomino amigo, it's the cowboy kid himself, Bobby Benson. Today's mysterious adventure, The Three Wise Monkeys.
That is the way Bobby Benson and the B-Bar-B sounded on the air. How long since you'd heard that? Do you sit and listen to it every night?
We listen to it very often at home. It's one of the things people come to the house and they're just plagued by the, don't move, we say to them, don't move, we're going to play another Bobby Benson. And they can't leave until they hear that and Cavalcade of America and all the other things, which I fear. Then my son comes out and he twirls a baton. And that's one of the ways we entertain.
Do people in the business that you work with, for the most part, know that Ivan Curry, television director, was Bobby Benson, radio actor?
Now you're asking a serious question. Or actually, the first one was. Some of them know. I mean, you know, because it gets around to that sometimes or other.
But some
most
of them remember you.
There's most so many of them don't care.
Old radio actors. Well, I care, you see. That's why you're here.
Yeah, no, but really, I mean, and truly, I'm glad you do. And I hope there's a great, vast audience out there who cares and will care again. And will take us to greater heights than we have yet known. And man has yet known. But in the meantime, most of the people who do know about it do not care. It's just, isn't that ridiculous? You know, I think I remember it. Or no, I haven't. I didn't hear it. I never heard that program, actually.
I must tell you, I didn't. I mean, I heard it.
See,
but I would turn the
dial.
That's
exactly what I mean. They're all sincere when they say it, mind you.
I'm sincere.
I know you are.
No, the reason I didn't hear it is I was never into Western. At all. I mean, even in the movies. I didn't go on Saturday.
Yeah,
I went on Sundays.
In the morning when you got sick, I mean, you know, if you got sick, one of the great joys of life was to sit at home at 9 in the morning and hear Second Call to Breakfast. It's time to, will you, and go through that whole morning section of that and My True Story and Whispering
Street. Oh, those
shows
I liked.
Right. Now, when you came home from school at 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 3, and you were through with your playtime, and you were going through the, you know, Superman cycle almost that
yes.
afternoon.
Yes, I heard Captain Midnight, Jack Armstrong.
You just switched off when Bobby Benson came on, is what you're telling me.
I was wondering what your competition was, because I was probably listening to it. What would it, do you remember what you were opposite?
I think it was Sky King.
I never listened to Sky King either.
Well,
I must have gone out
too,
to play or gone in the bathroom to do something when that came out. I did listen to Tom Mix from time to time.
Tom Mix is before my
but only because I liked his offers.
I liked his song.
His what?
His song. When it's round of time and Texas, why well, assuredly will agree.
Take a tip from Tom, go and tell your mom Shredded Ralston can't be beat. What was your sponsor?
I wish you hadn't said that.
You know what it was originally. You know how Bobby Benson started.
H. Barrow Rhodes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, but you I'm going to now test question for you. Who was the producer of the B-Bar-B show? He is significant in terms of the H-Bar-O show. This is trivia to the...
Peter Dixon was originally the creator of Bobby
Benson. That's right, and he was the writer. And he wrote it later on. However, the first... Now, gang, listen to this. Wow!
Glue your ears to the radio. Go ahead.
But first, this word... No, here we go. The guy who played Tex Mason on the Bobby Benson show in the H-Bar-O days...
Was
a fellow named Herb Rice. Bobby Benson in those days, you'll remember, was was Billy Hallop, who is now, I think, selling used cars in Los Angeles.
No, he's a nurse. Point. You haven't read my third book.
He's a nurse?
He is a male nurse. Well, what else could he be but a male nurse? He's a nurse in Pacific Palisades, and he specializes in geriatric cases.
Oh, you lie. I know you're lying.
Read my book.
That doesn't mean that it's true. You don't believe everything you read. You didn't. He is not. I mean, you know,
yes.
You're just wrong.
Yes.
Folks, don't listen to him. He's on the West Coast, and he's really selling cars.
No, he's not. Tom Drake is selling cars.
I don't know. I don't know. And it doesn't
do you really don't know what Billy Hallop is doing professionally?
Anyway.
Acting?
That is correct.
You mustn't watch All in the Family. He has a running part on All in the Family. But he's not on often, and he's not on big when he's on.
I don't watch it all the time.
But when Archie goes to the bar, one of the cronies at the bar...
I didn't know there was a bar.
...is Billy Hallop, and the segment they did with Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, yes.
He is the fellow who comes over from the cab station with the briefcase.
I just saw the last one. I'm sorry, I don't know it that well. I mean, I'm I feel like a decent, fine human being anyway.
Well, he was the original, right?
Yes, he was. And yeah. his text mason was a guy named Herb Rice. Then Herb Rice came to OR, or to Mutual, and brought the show in. Brought the show there. So Herb Rice then produced the Bobby Benson show. And there was not a sponsor. To this day, one wonders. Herb Rice, I think, now owns two or three stations in Connecticut. As I understand, one Willimantic or something like that. So he's still into radio and really knows it.
Well, Don Knotts was on your version, wasn't it?
That's right.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, but the sponsorship thing is a very interesting thing, because what happened was they were one of the first people to really use commercialization of merchandising. And they were in on the merchandising tie-in and made a lot of money. It was the same time Hopalong Cassidy was very big.
Your version of Bobby Benson was brought back to radio because it had been off for quite a while.
By the
right?
old Tex Mason, who was Herb Rice. That's the point of this.
Now, what years were you, Bobby Benson?
I don't know, 50? About. 50, 52?
Was on 2 years?
But I can tell you, I was, when I was born. That's not
Richard Wanamaker was Bobby Benson for a while, too.
I didn't know.
According to one of my sources.
When? Not?
No, on the old show.
The old show, maybe.
Was yours ever called Songs of the B-Bar-B? Because
no.
There was a show called Songs of the B-Bar-B.
No. No, it was not. I mean, the one that I did wasn't.
What about Windy Wales?
That was Don Knotts, who went
on... The cowboy Baron von Munchausen.
Yeah. That was a kind of... Don, I think, kind of ripped that off between... there were a whole batch of Western people then. You know, there was... Hopalong Cassidy was very big, but Roy Rogers had Gabby Hayes. So he did a kind of Gabby Hayes routine. That's what Windy...
There was a Fuzzy Knight, too. You know, they all had sidekicks.
Yeah. So there you go. That was... So Don did that routine. I think more... In terms of, you know, like the whole milieu there was... There were a couple of regulars on the show, like Charlie Irving, Charlie Irving was Tex Mason, and he used to do take soothing Pepto-Bismol and feel good again. He was a very good guy. Irish and Harka. One, as you might imagine, was Irish. The other fellow was Indian.
Indian
Harka.
Hand,
yes,
the
and
ranch.
They were played by Craig McDonald, same guy played them both.
Do you remember much about the setting?
Yes.
Where was it?
In the Big Bend country of the...
Of Texas?
Yes.
Fine. Go on.
Oh, I was found by old Bart Benson, owner of the B-Bar-B, a waif stranded in the desert. And was brought...
Like Our Gal Sunday. You
like so many...
The male Our Gal
like
Sunday.
Like so many, many of our heroes. Found out in the desert by a wonderful rich old man who owned an enormous spread. And he passed on, leaving the ranch to his young whatever I was.
Yeah.
And,
what were you, too?
I don't know. Very. We never got to speak to old Bart, but I had nothing.
You know, it's no wonder so many of that generation of young men who were tuned in, you know, turned out gay. I mean, when you think of Captain Midnight, Captain Marvel, Superman, they all had young, rather attractive boys at their sides.
You try
and think of this relationship.
Are you trying to say something about Tex Mason, the two-gun foreman of
those
my spread?
Those are the kind that people never suspect, you know.
Yeah. I guess you're right. I never thought of it that way.
Well, now, did he have a girlfriend?
Silly beast. No, but he was making eyes at Tia Maria.
Who was that?
That was our cook. See, you remember
old Tia Maria. Must have been an older woman.
She was a very, very attractive, young actress. Who was married to, Jim, I can't think of his last name, but he looks a little bit like, there's a very attractive, handsome, young, middle-aged now, actor who played, I can't think of his name, it doesn't matter.
He doesn't remember.
Anyway. Doesn't remember, folks.
Do you remember what your salary was?
Scale.
What was scale like in those
scale.
Days?
Scale. I would think that, Because, see, that was the thing that was so tricky about it. It was about $36 or $42 a show.
Was this a strip show when you
yeah,
did?
Yeah, it wound up being about five or six, maybe seven shows a week. Plus, there were television shows, but they paid like $20.
There was a Bobby Benson television?
Oh, yes. And we used to do personal
Were you Bobby Benson?
Yes. And then we used to do personal appearance things. So, but wait, let's say five times 40 is, what, 200 a week. So it's about $250 a week. And see, what would have happened if it had been sponsored was that everybody would have gotten a lot more money. And then you would have gotten like five or six or something like that. But there was no sponsorship, and that all the money that was coming in was going into merchandising.
Also, that kind of money meant much more. In 1950, didn't it?
It did in a way, and it didn't... I guess it did. Yes, it sure it did.
It's more allowance than I got, $250 a week.
I didn't get to see much of it, and but there are a lot of things that happen that are just insane, and part of it may be my own craziness, but maybe that's why I got to do, you know, the things I do. But I wound up taking... first of all, I had to go to a private school, because the hours are so insane, so that cost some money. Then at the time, I was taking piano lessons, tap dancing lessons, ballet lessons, French lessons, singing lessons, acting lessons. What other kind? I think that was about it.
You must do them all for us sometime.
Oh, simultaneously.
What about Diogenes Dodwaddle?
Diogenes Dodwaddle.
Doesn't ring a bell?
Another guy.
That was Tex Ritter on the original version.
What has Tex Ritter to do with Bobby Benson?
Was on Bobby Benson.
Tex
Ritter. Mm-hmm.
Was on Bobby Benson.
Bobby Benson, yeah, the original Bobby
Benson. Oh, in 1935.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even born then, you know. Of course, you weren't either.
God love you. What network were you on?
He's old. He's an old man. He's an old, tired... What? I'm sorry.
What network were you on, Ivan?
Mutual.
They had all of those,
W-R.
Didn't they? Yeah.
No, there were only four. There was the red, the blue...
No, I mean, CBS. They had all the adventure shows. They really had the kids' shows, so I think...
They had a lot. There were CBS and NBC, and ABC, I guess.
ABC moved in at the end.
Yeah. Really. Also, what I admired most about them is their real hard slotting of time. Like, Sunday afternoon was mystery. Mystery time.
Good mystery, too.
Oh, good mystery. I used to do one of those that you may remember. Hold the phone. It's time for Henry. Public Energy Number One.
Yes.
That was the thing.
I remember Phone Again Finnegan.
No, I don't remember that. He really is very old.
No, I have a very good memory. That's all. You didn't date Little Orphan Annie, then?
I did not at any time now or in the past.
Ivan Curry told me he didn't even know Janice Gilbert, who is probably tuned in tonight.
I didn't know her.
Was it your idea to be an actor?
Yes.
How old were you?
About 2.5. That isn't even funny. When I was 4, I stood out... this is a terrible admission, which I don't think I'm going to go into. No, it's really too... It's really...
No, you have to tell it.
I'm not trying to be coaxed. I'm just embarrassed. I'm really embarrassed. Well, no. All right. When I was about... I think it was 3.5 or 4, I got lost from my... who was watching me at the time. And I was tap dancing in front of the cashier of the RKO Keith's on 81st Street with the hopes that she would put me on the golden screen or the silver screen. But she never did. And for 2 hours, I was out there with crowds wondering what this child was doing. That was nuts. So I wanted to do it very early on.
Do you know what that's all from?
A certain crazy... No, it's silly. My father was an accountant. My mother was a milliner. What has that got to do with anything? My mother left town once. My father and mother, when I was about 14 or so, left and went away for a week. Leaving me with, somebody. Me and my sister and somebody in the house. But I got the calls for radio shows, and I worked about triple the amount that I was working when my mother was in town. And she had just been canceling, saying no to shows so that I wouldn't die, because she thought it was too much work. So she wasn't, what I'm saying is she was not a pushy mom who was trying to get, she never went down with me to any auditions or calls. I used to have to, please, mom, let me go down.
You really liked it?
Oh, I loved it. Liked it a lot. Had long arguments with, I think it was Gil Mack, whom you ought to interview sometime, because he did lots of things. And I think I remember being about 13 or so, and he kept saying, "Your childhood is going by you. Your childhood. And I just, no way. No. I mean, I wasn't very good at baseball and football. I wasn't bad, but I just wasn't very good. And this was terrific, man. I got to really know the Shadow. He was next door, and it was taking place in a booth. It was dynamite.
Of course, I know the Shadow, too, but I had to wait until he was no longer the Shadow.
Well, yeah, but can you imagine, really meeting him then and, being able to go in and...
I wouldn't have been able to see
Shadow.
Him anyway, so...
Hi, Shadow, how are you? You could, that was the whole thing, you really could.
He was Lamont Cranston then, you knew him.
Yes, he was. Oh, it was terrific. The guy who did that, produced it, was Chick Vincent. I got pneumonia once in his studio. And it was about 2 hours to air, and he looked at me and said, "Kid, you look really sick. Get out of here." Which I thought was terrific of him to do. Even then, I thought it, because I was very sick. And I said, "But you haven't got anybody to go on." I said, get out of here.
Do you want to play one of the other tapes you brought? Let's play...
Absolutely not. No, please don't.
They'll think of you only as Bobby Benson.
That's the way it goes.
You don't want them to hear your cavalcade program.
Well, now, you know that you've already pre-recorded it and set it down.
So, we can cut this out,
no,
Ivan.
Please play it.
We're on tape.
Please play it, please.
All right, well, in this segment, we will play a recording. What year was it? The tape wasn't dated.
1949.
If you all remember, Cavalcade of the Air. That was the title of the show,
Cavalcade
wasn't it?
Of America.
Cavalcade of America.
6/13/49, as a matter of fact.
We're going to play just the opening, so they can hear what it sounded like and the terrific live orchestra they had there and what good billing Ivan Curry got. Here it is, Cavalcade of America.
WNBC and WNBC-FM, New York. 8 p.m., BULOVA, Bulova Watch Time. For Father, a 21-jewel Bulova. Stay tuned now for the Cavalcade of America.
This is WBAI-FM in New York.
Cavalcade of America. Starring Walter Hamden and featuring Ivan Curry in Footlights on the Frontier. Presented by the DuPont Company, makers of better things for better living through chemistry. Good evening, and welcome to Cavalcade. This is Bill Hamilton. Among DuPont's better things for better living through chemistry are DuPont Tontine window shades.
Okay, we're back.
Yes.
Well, now looking back, do you think that, you know, you missed out on anything on your childhood? Was he right in any way?
Sure, he was right in some ways.
But did you miss any really good parts that...
I suppose so. I suppose so. But I don't know what they were, because I missed them.
But you don't seem sorry or regretful about it.
Oh, no. Yeah. Not at all. I'm not at all. I don't regret that at all. I guess I regret being born and wanting the things that I want, what I really would like to. I mean, it would be so much easier if I could, for example, have loved medicine. I really wish, and I'm not joking for a second when I say, I wish I loved medicine. And I wish I worked at it as hard as I do with what I do now, and I wish that I, you know, thought about it in those days with the same kind of lust that I do for the showbiz. And I keep thinking I want to do it when I was four. It's 30 years later. I don't know better. But I wish I liked medicine is what I really wish.
I wish some of the people who practice it loved it as well as most of the people I know love show business.
I will drink to that. I drink to so many things that it doesn't seem anything, you know, really...
You know, as long as we're going to be addicted to things, professional things, it's a shame. I agree with you. I feel the same way, that we're not hooked on something really more meaningful than the things we do. Things I do, at least. I don't know. I can include you in that, but that's how I feel.
Yeah. No, I'm getting very annoyed. Also, both ways. I get annoyed one way. People who get upset because, you know, I'm talking about young men. I have a son. I have two sons. I hope they become fanatic about some of the things they want. I hope those things are great things, but if they are to ever do anything, you got to become slightly fanatic about it. It's all those crazy kids down the block who were messing with, you know, electronics that made things happen, made me able to make television programs, which I do now. So I'm for fanaticism in one way. I'm against it in that the people who really are crazy, fanatic and whom I love, just take it too far and they kill themselves, and I don't love them for that.
What made you leave acting then?
Well, you know, I was an actor until I was 17 or 18, and then I went to college. So part of the thing that my parents insisted that I get in, you got to get an education. It could be in the theater, but get an education. And so I went to Carnegie Tech, and I got a bachelor's there. And I lost about $8,000 worth of work that first year at Carnegie Tech.
That's how you thought of.
Yes, you know. well, it was, you know, like...
You probably would have been learning a hell of a lot more acting.
No, because what was happening was that I had, even when I was a kid actor, I Wow, I've got a lot of things to go, and it's too fast. I was learning a lot of things as an actor, but a lot of questions that I never could get resolved about how do you act? You know, what ought I to be doing? I know what I do, but is there some way? I found out there are about 20,000 guys who'll tell you, yes, there is a way. And any one of them may be right. You just have to do whatever you want, which is where I was when I began. But at least I went through the machinations. I took the time to make some decision about that. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Good. I don't think I would have been learning, because I needed the time to stop. I'd been working for about 7 or 8 years, and I just needed time to stop and figure out where I was. And so school was terrific for me. It got too long. After 2 years, I was getting tired, and then I got into politics and stuff like that, which just seemed, you know, it's just crazy. And I wasn't strong enough or smart enough or anything to stay out of it, or somehow, you know, I was involved with all that kind of insanity. You don't know what kind, but there is a kind of theater school that, maybe you do, I don't know.
Yeah, I do. I've never been to one, but I mean, I know people who are.
So there was that. That was one of the reasons I got out of it. Another reason is I got very glib. I mean, you know, you got a liner note or something? I can read a liner note. Really, with terrific. Here's a liner note from BAI, July and August 72. I'm going to read, open any place, and give you a typical, dull kind of reading. Daniel Ellsberg, Making of American Foreign Policy. Summer rebroadcast. On September 13th, 1971, Daniel Ellsberg spoke at the New School in New York on the making of American foreign policy. WBAI carried the speech live as it was given. And this is a rebroadcast of that program. I got to do that all the time. It didn't matter what I was saying or anything. It was just... So it's time to leave.
One of the things that occurs to me that you may have missed as a child and is that you weren't able to enjoy the radio programs that like I did or other kids did. Were you able to come home and suspend what knowledge you had of people standing around a microphone?
Oh,
could you enjoy The Shadow, for instance, when you got
very
home?
Very much. Sure. First of all, you were zonked on the story. You know, I used to try to rip off their old scripts. I'd go to the office and think, I mean, old scripts around I can read? They were terrific stories. Didn't matter. Then, as you listened to the shows and you really knew everybody, you knew all the rest, you kind of could do a whole mental game of them listening at the end to see if they would speed up, if they were out of time, or if they were going slowly, because, you know, so you had all kinds of other levels of consciousness that you can kind of listen to the shows on. It was terrific. No problem.
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that's right. You would have an advantage. I had no
idea. Yeah, I would think of things like somebody fluff, and I knew what their face looked like when they fluffed, because they would always kind of go, oh, kind of grimace, do a facial grimace. I mean, I used to do... When I fluffed, I used to stand on one foot, hop, and put my hand up in the air and tell the director, I'm sorry I fluffed.
Were most of them nice to you, the actors, you know, older
people?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, first, because I found out that they were nicer when I was doing, when they thought that I was quite successful and that I might even have something to say as to who did a part, and in fact, sometimes did. Not, you know, no big way. I wasn't like calling the shots or anything, but sometimes the director come in and say, geez, I need a heavy tomorrow. I got a very light voice. Who's around? And I say, you know, somebody that I liked. You know, just because he was a fun guy to be with. And he goes, I didn't think of him. So that, you know, if you're on... So some people would be nice to me. And when I stopped doing Bobby Benson, I stopped doing Bobby Benson and immediately went in and started doing Portia's Son, Portia Faces Life. And I'd meet people in the lounge on the third floor of NBC, and they... A lot of them who had taken time to say hello to me and be nice before stopped doing so, which I found. I was 13 or so at the time, and I thought that was terrific. I thought, you know, that's great. You know now just where it is. And that's, at first, I was kind of brought up short, but then I was glad. Fine, let me find out right now, because I'll see you all again.
And so you have.
I have.
Does it give you an interesting, you think, perspective now as a television director, having been an actor and know what they go through?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so, except that it was so long ago that I don't remember it. I think it would... the point is that there were so many who really were very nice that it's hard to, you know, I'm harkening back to that, it's hard to say about who was where. You know, there were phonies everywhere. And in terms of actors, working with actors, things like that, if you work with really terrific people, they are really terrific. I don't know that. I guess it makes sense. It's like sometimes people get afraid of working with guys coming in and go, "Wow, this is a real pro, man. Oh, we're really in trouble now." And that's not the point. The point is, if he's a real pro, you got joy now. If he's really a pro,
the easiest person people in the world to work for.
That'll be a joy to work with.
Yeah. Always when I go to interview people, it's always a relief when there were somebody who were really very, very important and important in a very meaningful way. Because I know, number one, they'll be right on time.
Yes.
You know, they'll be as interested in me as I am in them.
Yes.
Be very courteous. It'll be a very pleasant way to spend an afternoon.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's the other side of the coin, which we needn't go into. Tell them some of the shows that you directed CBS that they would see.
First of all, is this? I don't know. This, I guess it's okay. I
do the woman. New York,
do the woman show. Do the woman show in New York, which is on at 9:30 in the morning with Sherry Henry. And I do about one out of four camera threes, which I produce and direct. At CBS, and before that, I used to do the Soul Show at Channel 13, and I worked generally at 13 for about almost 10 years.
Have you ever directed radio?
Well, when you direct television, you kind of do.
Very different, though.
No. What I mean by that is that you kind of do, because you do things like voiceover spots and plugs, and you do. You don't do half-hour dramas. And no, I have not done half-hour dramas, but I've done 30-second dramas and 1 minute, minute and a half dramas and stuff like that. You do radio. One of the things about television that's so bad is that radio, the two, in my opinion, the two least worked on parts of television, and the two things that really need it are lighting, because there's just not enough time to spend lighting a show, and audio. I had an audio man once who used to say, the only time anybody ever remembers that there's an audio portion of the show is when it goes bad. And he really was right. We only become aware of it when it's really bad.
Well, here one is aware of it from time to time.
Yeah. Silly that we should have a little grumble and take.
No, but you don't miss the medium, radio. Because I must say I would very much. You know, I do a lot of television and promoting my books, but I really love radio.
WBAI, New York.
You're not talking about the same thing. You're not talking about the same thing I am, because I'm talking about working at it, and you're talking about listening to it. I miss listening to it.
No, I'm talking about working at it.
Oh. I don't know the difference between, for example...
Oh, I think there are far fewer things to worry about, you know.
To worry about.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, number one, how you look. So what does it matter in radio?
Yes, you know, directing a radio show, I'm sure, has to have been less complicated than directing a television show, although there were some things that it added that, you know, that were not there. For example, scoring may have been more, you know, into it, or sound effects. But hopefully you use the same amount of sound effects and scoring in a television show. So really, you're doing a radio show if you're doing a television show, but you got some pictures to worry about, too.
You don't find that television is much more frantic, though?
Much more frantic. Much more frantic.
Maybe you like that part.
I suppose at the moment I do. I don't know. At the moment, I think I do, yeah.
It always surprises me a little that some people do. I don't, but I know. I guess some people really groove on that.
No,
you know, the tension.
Yeah, that's what I mean about doctors. I wish, because I'm going like crazy, and I might as well be going for something like, you know, doctoring rather than the boob tube or something. I do like the fanaticism. But really, I think it is that, and it was like when I was a kid, it was a challenge to do it. It really was. First of all, I was sure I was going to fail. And, you know, every day I'm going to fail. No, I wouldn't, so I would have surmounted it again.
Was it a game you played with yourself, or you really felt it?
I don't know, and I haven't been in analysis long enough to know, and that's what we're after at the moment, and I just can't tell. I haven't got a clue. The same thing is true in television, because it is so frantic. There are so many things pulling at you, you know, and you really have to, you're it. And if you can keep, and you must, if you're going to run the thing, you got to keep calm. Getting together, and I'm not very calm.
I've been talking today with Ivan Curry, and we started...
And you're not going to finish yet. You're going to go on and on talking to me.
I feel like I have, actually.
Oh!
Ivan Curry has been here today, as though you could have missed him. He's a television director, and he directs Women, even though he... Woman, the show Woman, even though he uses the word gal. And he turned me down recently for a hosting job on a television show. And he was also Dickie on, don't talk in my lines, please, Dickie on Portia Faces Life. And he was here being Bobby Benson, among other things. Listen, we've talked enough about you. Let's end with one of your competitors. And he was on Saturday afternoon, so it really wasn't a competitor. But it was Smilin' Ed McConnell. Let's end by letting them hear how... The Buster Brown Gang show began. I'm Richard Lamparski. Thanks for listening, and I hope you all have a real nice evening.
Hi, kids. You better come running and fool Smiling Ed and his Buster Brown Gang.
Buster Brown is on the air.
Hello, grandmother. Hello, granddaddy. The uncles and nieces and nephews and cousins and brothers and sisters and pets.
Hey, everybody.
This is your old buddy, Smiling Ed, and all his big Buster Brown gang. Squeaky the Mouse, Midnight the Cat, Grandy the Talking Piano, Roggy the Gremlin, out here in Hollywood, all ready for another good old Saturday. Whoop 'em up.